Suzanne Giesman is a spiritual teacher and author. She's a former Navy commander with a master's degree in national security affairs who served as a commanding officer and aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. She now guides people to enjoy a consciously connected and divinely guided life. Suzanne has authored 15 books and YouTube videos with over 12 million views. She leads classes, workshops, and retreats and produces the Daily Way inspirational messages shared on the Awakened Way app. You can find out all about that in the show notes. Suzanne is known for her joyful, down-to-earth style of making deep spiritual concepts easy to understand. She shares evidence-filled stories of the greater reality and practical tools that produce a personal experience of our multidimensional nature. And again, like I said, you can find out everything about Suzanne in the show notes. Suzanne, thank you so much for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we have something in common in that we were both once in the military. And I look back, like, for me, I've only been out for 3 years, a little over 3 years, 3.5 years. And it already feels like a lifetime ago. So I'm sure that's the same for you. But how did you go from being a commander in the Navy, an aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to now doing what you do?
Well, September 11th was a big catalyst for me. I was in the last aircraft in U.S. airspace flying to England. The chairman was going to be knighted by Queen Elizabeth when we got word of the attacks. And at his command, I went up to the cockpit and said, take us back to the Pentagon. And the pilot looked at me and he said, Commander, this flight path is going to take us right over Manhattan. And by that point, every other aircraft in U.S. airspace had been grounded. We were the last aircraft in U.S. airspace. We flew right over this billowing smoke coming up. I have pictures of it that we took. Then we landed at Andrews Air Force Base outside Washington and had a police escort through the deserted streets, going across the Southeast Southwest Bridge to see smoke billowing out of the Pentagon that we had left only hours earlier. It was just surreal. So we went into the building. The chairman got a big briefing, and then we walked to see the site of the impact. And I stepped over jet engine pieces in the grass and stood there staring at the gaping hole in our office building. That was the start of my journey when I started asking, why were some of these people, my colleagues, in the wrong place at the wrong time? They were here this morning, going about their day, and now they're gone. I didn't know where they'd gone. I had never dived into the afterlife. I was raised with no religion. I had no way to get answers. That started me looking for answers, and I went down the traditional religious path, and it just wasn't satisfying. So I put it all away and put in my retirement papers. They issued everybody at the Pentagon gas masks, and I just said, you know, I have fulfilled my duty here. I want to live my dreams while I can, unlike a Navy commander at the Pentagon who was killed on 9/11 2 weeks before retirement. And my husband and I had dreamed of sailing into the sunset, and that's exactly what we did. We sailed off on our sailboat. We'd sold our house and our cars, and life was rather idyllic. And we crossed the Atlantic Ocean, our sailboat, you know, got that check in the block, adventure. And then life caught up with us with the death of my stepdaughter, Susan. She was a sergeant in the Marines, stationed at Cherry Point Marine Corps Air Station, was crossing the flight line to report to duty one morning. And out of the blue, literally blue sky, a bolt of lightning struck her and killed her.
My goodness.
And she was 6 months pregnant with our only grandchild. So we flew back from Croatia where we got the news. And, you know, I had run away from people's grief at 9/11. I actually volunteered, Alec, to be an escort during the memorial service at the Pentagon. Big mistake, because I didn't realize I couldn't handle other people's grief. I didn't know what to do with that. And suddenly, that wasn't other people's grief. It was our family's grief. Incomprehensible to me that Susan was gone until I saw her body in the coffin. And I knew there is something within all of us that gives life to us. Her body was just so different. It was just missing her vitality. And I know now that we are souls now, and the soul knows certain things. And these have a way of percolating to the surface. And in that moment of looking at her lifeless body, my soul was obviously telling me, Susan still exists. go find her. And that's what I began doing that week. This was 2006 when meditation was not as common as it is now. But somehow, again, the soul speaking, and I would not have put it in those terms then. I just felt driven to sit quietly and say, Susan, reveal yourself to me. And I did that every day without fail. And I fell asleep the first 3 weeks every time. You know, this is like my body wasn't used to slowing down and relaxing. It's like, nap time, right? And
where did that come from, the inspiration to do that every single day and without the, you know, let's say logical understanding that any of this would happen, especially being that you were in the military, you were probably, I'd imagine, left brain leaning.
Very.
And given that, what gave you the impetus to sort of begin doing this meditative practice and trying to connect with Susan?
Besides just this inner knowing of the soul, which I didn't know was a soul, I would say it was a book that I had just happened to find about 6 weeks before Susan passed, when we sailed through Italy and stopped at a Navy base, U.S. Navy base, and they had a used book table. And I grabbed a bunch of them because books in English were hard to come by. And they didn't have Kindle in 2006, I don't think. And I found a book by this medium named James Van Praagh, who's actually quite famous. And reading about that, most likely that's what sparked this awareness that, okay, maybe the spirits exist. I thought it was silly when I read that book. I thought, oh, he's talking about people doing things in the afterlife that we do here. I didn't want my husband to see that book. He's a retired Navy captain. And I thought, he's going to think I've lost my mind if I'm reading a book like this. So I made sure he didn't see it. But when she died and I saw her body, I'm sure now that that book triggered something in me that, okay, if there are these people called mediums who can connect with people who have died, then why can't I?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And so what was your first experience of connecting with someone? Was it with Susan?
It was not. And in fact, Alec, it's only about a year or two since Susan came to me. She's come to me many times on this path. And she said, Suzanne, I didn't come to you right away because I wasn't supposed to. If I had come to you right away, it would have been mission accomplished. I know Susan exists now, and I would have stopped. Mm-hmm. She's right. But instead, I was so determined, I'm going to communicate with you, I'm going to talk to you, I'm going to know you're here, that I didn't stop. But along the way, I didn't realize I was learning to expand my consciousness. I was starting to attune to different levels of being in the whole field of consciousness. So well before I connected with Susan myself, I took my husband to a medium. I found a woman who I knew didn't know us. I didn't give her my last name. I said to my husband, we're going to see if Susan exists. That woman brought through irrefutable evidence that Susan was in the room with us. You know, there's a young woman here in a brown uniform. She's calling you daddy, sir. The clincher of that session was when this medium said, and she's bringing with her a little baby boy who she wants to introduce to you. Susan was going to have a boy. We knew that. I mean, I was sobbing. My husband started sobbing. There was so much more evidence in that session, things she could not have known about Susan, especially when she said she's getting ready to leave now, she says, but just for a little while. And Ty is my husband's name. She says, Ty, this young woman has just crawled onto your lap and put her arms around your neck and her head on your shoulder like this. Alec, that's exactly what our tough as nails sergeant used to do. And it's the last thing she did when we saw her.
Wow.
Before we went back across the ocean. We came back for her wedding 7 months earlier. That's what she did. So that changed my life. And I had already written several books at that point. And I said, I am going to write a book about mediumship and tell people this is real. Mm-hmm. Because my military mind would have just dismissed that. But we couldn't deny it. There was no doubt that Susan was in that room. So I wrote the biography of two mediums. The second one, Janet Nohavik, teaches or taught. She has passed now. She taught mediumship. So I said, well, if I'm going to write your story, I need to sit in your class and take notes on what you do. She went through systems that anybody learning mediumship can do to connect reliably, repeatedly with those across the veil. I was fascinated. I thought, you mean you can learn this? Because I was under the false impression you have to be a born medium, aware of this ability from childhood, which I certainly was not. So I'm fascinating, writing notes. And she said, oh, there's a spirit here. I want somebody to come up and use the system I just taught you all. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun to watch this. And she went, Suzanne, come up front.
Wow.
Now, you know, with your military background, if somebody tells you to come up there, you're not going to say, oh, no, I can't do it.
It's called being voluntold. Like, there's no such thing as volunteering. You're just voluntold. But yeah.
And can do, right? We're going to do. Okay, right. Sure. I think she's going to, you know, put me on the spot. And I wish the hole would open up in the floor, but okay. But that was 2 years into my meditation journey, 2 years of daily meditation looking for Susan. Still hadn't connected with her, but I was starting to get guidance, insights, have a bit of psychic ability unfold. I would know things about people with no explanation of how. So when Janet called me to the front of the room and I stood there, I didn't feel any presence, but I knew she did. And I know she was very ethical and she wouldn't have said there's a spirit here if she hadn't sensed it herself. So trusting her, and I knew she wouldn't call me to the front if she didn't think I could get something. She said, all right, male or female? And I said, male. She said, what kind of work did he do? And my mind is just rebelling, saying, how could I know this? And I just closed my eyes for a moment, asked the question, and I said, I hear engineer. How old was he? 70. What did he die from? She said. This was this whole list of evidence she had told us that we would be able to get. And I said, well, I hear cancer. And Janet says, anybody in the group take that? And this woman's hand shot up and she said, my father was an engineer. He died at age 70 of cancer.
Wow.
Now, my mind is saying, what are the chances of that? I'm trying to do the math, the statistics, because I feel like I'm pulling data out of the air. I didn't feel a presence. And Janet gave the greatest gift ever. She said, yeah. And his birthday, he's telling me, was March 31st, and he had a baseball cap collection. And I thought, wait, you mean there really is somebody here? Because she can sense that. And the girl goes, yeah, that's right. And Janet said, okay, Suzanne, get some more. It's like, what do you mean more? That wasn't good enough. Four pieces of evidence. So I don't remember exactly what came next. Then Janet gave some more. And I looked at her and I said, may I sit down now? And she said, no, just push yourself a little more. And it was all of that meditative practice that had allowed me to just still the mind in those moments of just listening and looking and noticing what popped out that wasn't my thoughts. And what popped out was an image of black patent leather shoes, and I heard twinkle toes. So I shared that, and the girl in the audience said, my dad was a ballroom dancer, and my mom called him Twinkle Toes. So this is before I even connected with Susan, and I thought, you mean I might be able to bring comfort to some family like that medium brought our family in the reading? I said, Janet, I don't want to just write about your life. I want to take all of your classes. And I did, and then I ended up going to England and studying where she studied with Mavis Patillo, one of the best mediums in the world. She also died 2 years ago, within a month of Janet. And so I learned how to connect very clearly with other people's loved ones. Susan did eventually come in, astounding evidence she gave me to validate to her dad, this is not me making this up to make you feel good, Ty. But the mediumship was just a stepping stone in my journey. It's what showed me we're all connected. It's what showed me we are all souls now, because it's not a human connecting with a soul in mediumship. It's soul-to-soul communication. Mm-hmm. And it's what showed me that because we are all souls, we can all bypass the filters in the brain and access higher consciousness at will if it serves the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I want to jump right into some questions about mediumship, if that's okay, then we'll get to the other stuff. And I want to say on your comment that you had previously thought that you had to have sort of been born with this ability. I know two different sets of kids that two of my friends, it's their kids, that have the ability to read blindfolded. And I've seen it happen myself. I've filmed it myself. I even put a piece of paper over my phone while they had the blindfold on, pulled up random messages on my phone. They read every word on my phone. They were playing catch with each other. And one of my friends teaches these classes on Zoom to a bunch of other kids. So I know that this is an ability that can be cultivated. So I'd imagine it's the same when it comes to mediumship, that everyone has the capacity to do it. Just like, you know, Michael Jordan has a greater capacity to jump from the free throw line and dunk than some other people. Yeah. It may be the same when it comes to something like this. Some people might have a higher capacity to learn something like this than others. Is that kind of how you view mediumship?
I usually use the analogy of Mozart. You know, everybody can learn chopstick, but not everybody's going to be a Mozart. But it also is a matter of how committed you are to training your mind to access these expanded states. And is it a calling? Because it is a bit of a gift. It's an ability we all have. But I'm just so grateful to Spirit for the way the evidence comes through to me. I will tell you, this morning I did a reading, and I haven't been able to do many in the last month because we're traveling every day. And I had to call it off. Every single thing I said, the woman said no.
Wow.
And that just, I don't want to say it doesn't happen to me. It's almost impossible to get nothing but no's. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I have a guide in Spirit who helps me. And she was doing this like a wave off. She said, call it off and reschedule. There's too much chaos in the air.
I was just about to ask that. If there is too much chaos in the ether, given everything that was going on yesterday.
Yeah, and
that is hilarious.
There have been other times when I've had to call off a reading, and I've learned not to blame myself or the client. We just don't know. But I can always tell, refer to someone else if that happens, or redo. And I was told, absolutely, just reschedule. And I can't wait to see how it goes then, because when that connection is there, it just flows. Mm-hmm. And it's wondrous. And it's a two-way, real-time conversation with a sentient, creative, clever being who's still here. But there was nothing.
So this brings up my next question, actually, because you're talking about how, there's too much chaos in the air yesterday. And I look at it in terms of science prior to the 20th century, really maybe part of the 19th century, was all in agreement. The scientific community, so to speak, were virtually all in agreement that there was a fifth element, ether. And ether, when you bring that back into context, acts as a medium that we're all swimming through right now. And that makes much more sense how Tesla's technology works and how these psychic, seemingly supernatural abilities can work, because there is an actual medium that is we're able to pull and exchange information from, and possibly the Akashic records exist within that or is fundamentally an aspect of it. But you also talked about how when you first were channeling, you felt like you were pulling data out of the air. So my question is, do you think that this is going to be a multifaceted question? Do you think that you can claim with certainty that you are discussing with these beings that are beyond? Or is it possible, have you left any room for the possibility that there's just an imprint of them left in the ether that you are communicating with?
I have examined that very carefully, and I know it is not an imprint. I could go to a cemetery and possibly pick up imprints of energy that are there.
Oh, so you've been able to sort of distinguish between an imprint versus the being, essentially.
I have not had the experience of an imprint. I know it's possible, but one of the biographies I wrote was about a medium named Anne Gaiman, also passed. She could absolutely feel imprints. That's why I know that's possible. What I differentiate from is picking up information from somebody else's mind, like a client's mind, versus an actual conversation with the spirit. There is a liveliness. There's a personality here. We are interacting. They just don't have a body. Whereas if I just tuned in and I could pick up on the fact that you have this loved one across the veil and this is what they were like, that would be an imprint in your energy field of someone with whom you've interacted.
So it almost gives you the same feeling in your body in a different way as if you're having a conversation with someone.
It is.
Yeah.
And we are.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to mediumship, can you share some of the most compelling stories that you have on your journey of acting as a medium? I mean, that one you just shared about your first experience, that's pretty compelling in and of itself.
But
some other ones,
too. Yeah, I have so many. So I ask, and the one that comes to mind right away is this woman who came to me in person at my house when I was really new on this journey. And she sat down in front of me, and turns out her doctor sent her to me. The doctor didn't know how else to help her, but I didn't know any of this beforehand. And I just tuned in and I said, oh, you have a husband who passed. And she said, yes, I do. And I said, he's giving me a pain in my head. I actually feel the symptoms of how loved ones pass. I said, he showed me a sudden bursting. This feels like an aneurysm to me. And her eyes got really big. Yes, he passed from an aneurysm. And I said, he's telling me he's so proud of you because you're going to travel for the first time since he passed. You're traveling on your own to England. She looked at me and she said, how do you know that?
See, that's indicative of a conversation right there, right. too. Right?
No, like it gets
that,
better.
That can't be an imprint.
It gets better.
Okay.
And I said, because he's right here and he knows that because he's still with you. And we went on and he had things to tell her because she didn't get to say goodbye, which he knew about and wanted to let her know certain things. And as we were coming near to the end of our time together, I said, your husband just said word for word, and this is not an imprint, don't you dare take those pills in your purse. And her eyes got really wide and she said, nobody knows that I stopped at the pharmacy on the way here because if I hadn't heard from my husband, I was going to take all those pills.
Wow.
But he knew.
Yeah.
And that was no imprint.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have lost count of the number of people who said my work has saved their life. Because people get in a really dark place when you think your loved ones are dead and gone.
Mm-hmm.
The body is dead. They are not gone. Phenomenal story. That's a little long, though.
It's okay. If you have time, I got time.
Okay. So, I was given a talk based on a book I wrote called Wolf's Message, which we should talk about Wolf later.
Yeah, I got that as a note.
We're making a documentary about him right now. Be out next year. But I used to give a presentation called Heart Gifts based on Wolf's Message, a young man named Wolf. And I gave that talk in Arizona, and this one woman went rushing out of the venue. Her heart cracked wide open when she felt the energy in this presentation. Heard the story, could not deny we are all souls, and she didn't know what to do with that feeling. That was love that she had just bottled up her whole life. She was gay, overweight. Her father just demeaned her whole life. She hated herself. And all of a sudden, all this love that's already in her just was trying to come out. And she felt the love coming from spirits that were all around. She wrote to me the next day and said, I don't normally write to authors, but I don't know what to do with this feeling. And I don't normally channel my guides just like that. But I said, I have a download for you. And I recorded it, sent it to her. And the guides had said, you are having repeated medical problems in the gut area from diminishing your own personal power. She was. She had cancer 3 times in that area. She ultimately passed from bile duct cancer, 2015. Her name is Brenda. But we befriended each other. She would write these really long emails to me, and I didn't have time to answer back. Then there's this other woman named Lynette who would write these really long emails, and they had similar backgrounds. I played matchmaker, even though Lynette's not gay. They became soul sisters, and just they would then send these long emails to each other, and they became self-proclaimed my number one stalkers. They followed me to my events around the country, and Brenda started studying mediumship with me and with some others, and then she passed. Within hours of passing, she's right here,
Wow. Sitting
next to me, hours. Talking in her voice, she was funny and sassy. I can feel her right now. And she's telling me what it was like to pass and how wonderful it was to be free of that cancer-ridden body. She's saying, Suzanne, I'm right here. There's nowhere else to go, which is profound in itself. Telling me that she was traveling around visiting all of our friends at once. She could bilocate, trilocate. It was fascinating. And I said to her, Brenda, you know, there's not a shred of evidence in what you're sharing with me. I've never been more sure that you are right here, that anybody is right here, because she was a force.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you need to give me some evidence. So when I tell Lynette and all of our friends that you dropped in on me within hours of passing, that this is really you, because that's how it works. We got to get the evidence. So you could just feel her kind of go like, okay, fine. You know, she doesn't need to tell me how she passed all, you know, all the list. Right. She just goes, like my boa. And she flicks her hand back like she's flicking back a boa, like a scarf, like a movie actress would wear. I had no idea what she was talking about, but I'm typing this whole exchange as it's happening. And I type down, like my boa, and I type, what? And she didn't explain. She just went right on to saying, Suzanne, I'm talking to you now because I cleared out all the gunk, the emotional stuff, the blockages in my system. She'd had a healing, an energy healing a month before she passed. We all thought she was healed. It cleared the chemo brain. She could meditate and concentrate again. And then she passed. She said she was healed. And it was because all the love that was inside her was able to come to the surface, and she passed loving herself. She's immediately communicating with me from across the veil. She just now said, yeah, and I'd studied mediumship, so I knew how to do this. So I immediately wrote to Lynette. Nowadays, I'd call Lynette in the middle of the night. She became my dearest friend and assistant for 6 years. But I emailed it to Lynette, and I said, I know you're going to know what the like my boa means. I know you will, because it's just in my awareness. So I wake up at 2 a.m. I wonder if she answered me. And I get my email and my phone, my husband's sleeping next to me, and I look, and there's an email back from Lynette. It starts out, OMG. She said, you don't know, but Brenda and I talked for hours before she died, every day. What's the afterlife going to be like? What's it going to be like to die? And Lynette said that Brenda would say to her every day, tell me about Zsa Zsa. It was this story. It's like a kid saying to their parent, tell me this story again, mom or dad. She would say, tell me about Zsa Zsa, Lynette. And the story is, this is pretty profound, so bear with me. Lynette was 7 years old, growing up in Oklahoma, and her parents took her to New York City. She was all excited because she was going to get to see the goddess, Zsa Zsa Gabor. They go by the Playhouse on Broadway, and there's a big playbill poster on the wall. And little Lynette looks up at that and was crestfallen because that didn't look like Zsa Zsa. She's dressed like a farm girl, no makeup, no fancy hair. She's just like her dreams were shattered. They go to leave. They walk around the corner. The stage door opens. True story. And out steps Zsa Zsa Gabor. And she looks like Zsa Zsa. And she's wearing a boa. And Lynette would say to Brenda, every time she told her this story, I know that these bodies are just the costumes for our soul. That we can dress like a farm girl or a mailman or a fireman or whatever. But when this body dies, we take off the costume and step back into our magnificence, boa and all.
Wow.
So here I am talking to Brenda for the first time, hours within her passing. She's telling me I'm free of that body. Everybody's saying she's gone. Oh my God, she's not breathing. And I'm like, gone where? I'm looking at them all. This is how she's talking to me. That clearly, this is not an imprint. This is a very live soul.
Right.
And I ask her for evidence. She doesn't want to tell me things, all kinds of things I don't know, but she knows I don't know that story. So in three words, she gives a message for all of us, like my boa.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, hey,
right.
I took off that cancer-ridden costume, and here I am in all of my magnificence. I believe I tell that story at the beginning of my book that you have right there. So I hate to spoil that story, but it's the bottom line for all of us. This is why mediumship is just what I do. But I'm a spiritual teacher first and foremost, because it just shares the awareness for all of us who we really are and how to graduate and go to the head of the class. Love yourself now. Find what's already within you. and share it with others in service to each other and spirit.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said.
I'm really rambling.
No. You say you're really rambling?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not. That was great.
Well, I'm just not giving you a chance.
It makes my job okay. Way easier. This is incredible. And I do have plenty of questions, though. I want to eventually get into the nature of reality, life and death, and things like that as well. One of the things that you said, though, with respect to Brenda, is that she cleared out all her gunk, you know, obviously dealing with those stomach issues, the cancers multiple times, just prior to her passing. But a lot of us, and I would imagine a lot of listeners and viewers of this podcast episode, have grown up with this idea that if we are not subscribing to a certain religious ideology, whatever it is, that we will spend our afterlife eternally suffering and things like this. And I've had some conversations with people who recontextualize the original Hebrew meaning of hell, for example, is Gehenna, which is a place outside of Israel that, you know, the people at that time dumped their trash that had nothing to do with eternal damnation. But the point being, nonetheless, many of us are both worried about what happens after this life and also sort of taking in this conditioning. The other thing that I want to bring into this, I'm kind of creating a framework here.
Can I comment on what you just said? One of the things that Lynette and Brenda had in common was they were both raised by the same pretty traditional religion and were taught from age five to say, I am a poor and worthless sinner.
Yeah.
And Lynette had such a profound fear of death because she was sure she was going to go to hell that when I met her, she was permanently, or so she thought, crippled, wearing the kind of crutches that go up your arm. She was the crippled lady because she was too afraid to have knee surgery, and that would have helped her. She hadn't flown for 30 years because she was afraid she would die if the plane went down, terrified of death. Through my work and mediumship, she came to know that's all BS. Mm-hmm. If you read my book, that stands for belief system. Belief system. And she'd bought into it. She had the surgery. She made a video of those crutches sailing through the air and into a dumpster. She now flies all over. She's flown to England with me to teach a class. She says, I'm free. That's what, when my guides first came through to Brenda, they gave her a mantra. I am free. I am free. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn to study your BS. Were you told that? What's your personal experience of reality? Start questioning.
I love that you said personal experience too, rather than like what's my truth. I struggle with the concept of my truth because I think there's objective truth and there's opinion about what is objective truth. And I'm not saying that any of us can ever know objective truth on any given situation or of the nature of reality itself, but I really appreciate the opinion of objective truth there. What's my direct experience in this life or beyond life telling me? The question related to hell, I totally agree. BS, like belief system, another word to put in place there. But I interviewed this guy named Vinny Tolman who had what's called an after-death experience, which is a small subset of the near-death experience community who are legally pronounced dead, zipped up in a body bag. And
oh, I read his book.
Yeah. It's a pretty incredible story. So that was in episode 4 for those who are listening and watching this. If you want to go back and check that out, episode 4 of the Way Forward podcast. And he mentioned that his experience in, let's say, for lack of a better term, the realms beyond or what most refer to as heaven, there are these little orbs outside of heaven that he referred to as pearly gates. It almost looked like pearly gates. And of course, in order to enter beyond, you had to reach a certain frequency in order to be able to get there, right? And he was able to sort of peer into one of these orbs that looked like pearly gates, right? It looked like the pearls on a pearly gate. And there was someone in there that was very clearly working off their karma. And for Vinny's experience of this, it looked like he was peering into an orb where a guy was dressed in 1920s, 30s, sort of New York attire, Italian guy. And he was just screaming. And Vinny, instantly knew that he was screaming at his son, right? And so this guy was sort of working off his, you know, karma, if you will. And then the moment he had reached the threshold of working that off, he became aware of where he was and then moved beyond those gates, so to speak. So when I think of like cleared out all the gunk, obviously there's gunk that we accrue in this lifetime that is physical. And oddly, or not oddly, but more so, I guess this is no surprise to me, a lot of that physical gunk is the result of emotional and metaphysical gunk. Overwhelmingly, I've said this on a number of episodes, that I think our health issues physically and mentally are largely a function of our emotional state, our mental state, our spiritual state. And so that's no surprise. But there's also this metaphysical clearing out of gunk that we may not reach in this lifetime. So is there some period, and this is like very long, just trying to give all the context. Is there some period in the afterlife where you do have to work off some sort of karmic debt in order to, come back to oneness with God? I know we're not ever separate from
that,
God.
But that depends on what you have accomplished in this life. How the guides will ask you the moment you cross, what have you brought back? How much more love have you brought back than you went there with? I want to give you a quote from Brenda that first time she visited me. She said, "Suzanne, every one of us is walking wounded. You can see the scars in the aura from up here." That's metaphorical. She said, "The ones you work on, they look like little glow worms." Picture that. Because we all have this light inside of us. That's a soul. That's our own inner light that never goes out. And so it gets occluded, clouded over with our gunk, with our thoughts. And we all have it. We come here and it's part of being human to be traumatized by other humans.
Isn't that kind of like the whole, one of the whole points of the experience?
So it's really timely that you ask this question about the afterlife, because I received a download of what is the afterlife like. There's a noted NDE researcher named Dr. Kenneth Ring, probably the expert in NDEs. He asked me, "What do your guides say about the afterlife?" So I asked them, and I just recorded that, even though I got it years ago, and put it on YouTube. Actually, it'll be up in just a couple of days, but by the time this airs, it's already up. And it's called The Afterlife, What Can You Expect? And it talks about orbs and different layers and how high you go and what you take with you when you cross. So it's going to be different for every person. I have only encountered two people in a reading who were truly what we would call evil while they were here. And they showed up metaphorically to me. It probably would have appeared very different to other people. But these two men in two separate readings came in looking like they were cocooned up to here, accompanied by very loving beings like angels. That's how it appeared to me, so I would understand this. And they showed me that these two men had perpetuated such evil acts, their energy was not yet allowed to merge back into the field of others across the veil until they'd worked it off. And coming through in the reading to share their apologies, make their penance with their loved ones here, was part of the way they were going to work that off.
Wow.
Yeah. This is, I mean, we're talking a level of evil that I said your father, this one wasn't even allowed to talk. The angel spoke for him. They said he was truly a monster.
Wow.
And she said, "Yeah, I called him a monster. He raped and murdered numerous teenage boys. And yet, here he came accompanied by loving angels." Mm. Yet again, he had to do the work to clear his energy field himself, as do we here.
Mm.
And we all make mistakes, and we learn by trial and error. We got that light, that inner guidance system, that once you start paying attention and set the intention to clear out the gunk yourself, knowing it's going to make your experience much more pleasant here and in the hereafter, you start reaping the benefits of that. Mm. As a medium, when I realized that my own personal stuff is what's going to filter out my connection. I want to be the clearest possible instrument for spirit. So anytime I catch myself saying something snarky to my husband, I'll say, where did that come from? I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be that person. And I go into meditation and I ask my guides, where did that come from? Because I don't know. And then you see.
Mm-hmm. A question on the nature of evil itself. So there's a Native American concept, which I'm sure you've heard of, Wetiko, that there's like
I saw the book on the shelf over here by Paul Levy.
So there's like an essence of evil that is corrupting the minds of mankind. Let's call it a mind virus, right? You know, according to Native American traditions, Paul Levy and others. And there are other words across cultures and civilizations and traditions to describe what that is. But with these individuals that you had come across that were sort of, for lack of a better term, fundamentally evil, it seems like. And I don't want to say fundamentally because
I wouldn't agree with fundamentally.
What is the term you would use there? Because I
would say they are completely blocked and to the awareness, blocked. Ignorant of the awareness, ignorant of who and what they are.
Yeah, that makes more sense, especially because they're being accompanied by angels here. So this is a two-part question. One, do you think that those individuals had been corrupted in some way by this mind virus? I've come to the conclusion that trauma is largely past hurt people, hurt people, hurt people, and that cycle continues until someone breaks it and carries the burden of the weight of all the trauma of their lineage or what was impressed upon them. And then they work to resolve it. They do the hard work to do the introspection and reconnect with themselves to heal that trauma and uproot it. Is it that these individuals were corrupted by that? And is Wetiko a fundamental nature of this realm that is necessary, or is it not necessary within this realm? Because we look at this human experience and it's like, I look at it as, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, we are here to experience the depth of darkness, pain within the individual context of our lives. Obviously, like some of us, that's going to be really, really dark. And some of us, there's a whole spectrum of this, but there's intention behind that. And for me, I look back on my own trauma and I had a pretty rough upbringing. And I look at that and I'm like, I am legitimately grateful for it. I can honestly say that now. Could I have said that 4 or 5 years ago? Absolutely not. But now I can say that I'm legitimately grateful for that because it gave me the context for the depth of love and how important that is. And so, yeah, I know I threw a lot at you. That was like seven questions in one.
I can't speak to Wetiko at all. And I started reading the book and it just wasn't time for me and I set it aside. I have absolutely asked my guides and I channeled them for years now and I trust what they say. Anything I say, just test it in your heart. Do people come here knowing they're going to murder? Is there if there's a thing called soul's plan, do they come here and that's part of their plan? And the guide said, absolutely not. However, they would know they're stepping into a lineage where they're going to choose parents. They are choosing parents who could very much lead to some trauma there. And it's like your guides and the soul as souls, they have this talk and say, okay, that's going to be a really huge challenge and an amazing opportunity to discover your light within despite those challenges. Yeah. Are you sure you're up to that? It's like, yeah, coach, put me in, right? And they just aren't. Mm. And they make choices that are not in alignment with the soul. And there is a lot in the whole human, the noosphere. Are you familiar with that term?
No.
Yeah, the collective field of human consciousness.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, there's the light and the dark. When you say we come here for the darkness, we come here for the fullness of the human experience. I was riding a mountain bike after a weekend workshop. I went out with my husband. I said, just got to get out in nature, get out in the trees on this nice flowy trail and just relax and re-energize. So we're having this great ride. It's flowy, it's buttery. I don't know if you know that term for mountain bike riding.
It's a snowboarding term too. So.
And then all of a sudden, the trail gets a little more technical. Just roots, rocks. I'm having to really pay attention now instead of just vegging. And I'm getting more and more irritated as we ride. And I finally said, this is supposed to be relaxing. I said this inside, and I hear this booming voice say, "It's a mountain bike trail, for God's sake." And I started laughing. I was like, oh, yeah. And I signed up for this. It is the perfect analogy for life. You know, we come here and people want off the planet when it gets rough. But this is life in a human body, for God's sake. The soul came here knowing it would be smooth and buttery at times and rough and rocky and very technical at other times. And that's how we grow, learning to master the ride.
Yeah.
And it's challenging. And sometimes you just want to take a break and step off the trail. And you can do that in meditation.
Mm.
And go back up on the balcony and look down on the drama and say, isn't that interesting? I did sign up for this. How can I do better when I get back on that bike or back on that stage? I'm mixing metaphors now, but it really helps with my book there that you have, The Awakened Way, making the shift to a divinely guided life. That shift is stepping onto the balcony. That shift is getting off the bike for a few minutes and just going to that place inside where there are no bumps. There's just peace. That's the shift that'll change your life.
So beautiful. So well said. For the people who are watching, listening, since she's brought this up a number of times, I think it'd be wrong of me not to say what this book is. It's in the show notes, The Awakened Way, Making the Shift to a Divinely Guided Life. So all of the info on that will be in the show notes. I have so many more questions related to mediumship and channeling and the nature of reality and the purpose of this human experience. So the other thing that comes up a lot when it comes to mediumship is the difference between mediumship and channeling. Do you distinguish between the two?
I definitely do.
Yeah.
In mediumship, the medium is an intermediary, the voice for those who are here. Just, you're like a telephone operator. You're reporting what the other person is saying, reporting it. In channeling, you get this first person, the eye of the medium, out of the way, and you just let higher consciousness, in whatever form it's showing up at the moment, speak through you.
Yeah.
It's a cooperative engagement. Now, sometimes in mediumship, I will blend so well with the spirit that's here. I take on their mannerisms. I take on their posture. I get their symptoms.
Have you had that happen before?
Yes, I have. Yeah. And you should see the look on like this one parent's face when I was this kid and I started saying, you know, just talking like this. And they're looking and they said, that's our son.
Oh, wow.
And you become them.
Yeah.
That's a form of channeling, but the kind of channeling that I do when I get out of the way completely and let my guides talk is a whole other level. And the energy is so much higher. We've had spontaneous physical healings from people in the audience when I channel my guides. A woman with facial paralysis for 33 years went to one of my sessions and left, and it was gone.
Wow.
And the document about the afterlife, what can you expect, that I just put online, that has that energy. It's just, it carries that higher energy that we can all learn to tap into.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. You talked about like your field merging with hers. And another thing you mentioned earlier with what Brenda had said about the scars in our field. It's so interesting. You and I were discussing this before. Someone who's also on the Shift Network, Eileen McCusick. I almost called her Dr. Eileen. Eileen McCusick. Eileen, if you watch or listen to this, you should give me some crap for that. Dr. Eileen McCusick. Eileen McCusick, who studies the human biofield and has developed what she calls the human biofield anatomy, which is attaches specific, let's say, distortions in our biofield and correlates them with physical symptoms of illness, or just, you know, physical symptoms of, you know, distress in the human body, which is so interesting because you brought up how Brenda was discussing scars in the biofield, and it makes so much sense as it pertains to Eileen's work. And then in this case, you're discussing acting as a medium for someone, but if you are cultivating that intimacy with this spirit, this soul that you are acting as a medium for, it can almost slip into channeling because it's like their field is sort of merging and overlapping with yours.
It's not almost, it is. That's what's happening. Yeah.
Wow.
We invite them to do that. And my students sometimes say, well, don't you worry about that? And we say, no, because you set the intention that only beings of the highest light merge with you.
That's what I was going to ask
those
next.
Those guys that were cocooned, they were over here. It's all kind of metaphorical because we're actually connecting beyond space and time. Mm-hmm. But that's how it appears so that we can make sense of it. And they were not merging with me.
Yeah. So when it comes to channeling and mediumship, I know that, you know, I've read several channeled texts and I have, as of late, especially because there's a lot more people on social media claiming to be able to channel. And for me, I can only speak to my own experience. I tune into some of the things that they're saying, allegedly channeling, you know, entities from the Galactic Federation of Light. Everyone seems to be channeling the Galactic Federation of Light, whatever that is, and a bunch of these other sources. And some of the information that's being conveyed, I'm like, that doesn't feel good here, first off.
Right.
And that doesn't sound legitimate. And I'm not denying any
that's
of...
That's why we have to show discernment.
Right.
Yeah. With mediumship, with channeling, all of that.
Yeah.
That's why I ask for evidence when communicate, even with my own guides.
And that's why you, like Eileen, are probably two of the best people for this line of work that can seem to other people to be too, quote, woo-woo. The reason I bring that up is because Eileen came from a very left brain perspective, logic based perspective too. And that sort of still informs the way you do things. Cause it's like, in order for me to know that this is legitimate, I would imagine you are tuning into your intuition, your heart. How does this sit with me as I'm listening to this individual saying these things? But also, like, does this logically make sense and balance out the two? Is that kind of how you approach this now when it comes to other people?
Most of the things that my guide Sanaya say through me and channeling are philosophical and spiritual, and there's not a lot of evidence. But I just know from the energy, and it's very helpful to the audiences, that it is legitimate. But I get daily messages from them. You mentioned in the bio that you read that I have an app, Awaken Way. The app is these daily messages that I get. And just the other day, I was feeling a little disconnected. And I said, you know, in today's message, give me some kind of miracle. Give me something that's going to show me this is you, which is just ridiculous. I've been connecting to them for 15 years, but this is the way we humans.
That's what happens with the human experience,
though. It is.
I mean, I've literally seen kids read blindfolded. Yeah. I've participated in a Qigong spoon bending class where 12 of 16 of us learned to bend a spoon. And even that, I still sometimes like slip back into
the
conditioning of this human experience.
It's the programming in the brain.
Yeah.
So we recognize that, but my guides are very patient. All of our guides, just they'll work with us. So they gave me this beautiful message about how to get back in balance by going out in nature and communing with trees and the bushes and plants. And I'm writing it as it comes in. And my normal process is to go straight from meditation. I email myself. I type it on my iPad, email myself the message. Then I copy it and paste it into the app. And then I go on a copyright-free photo page. I ask the guides what search term for the perfect picture with this. And they said, search for ecology. Okay. I type in ecology. Up comes this picture of a tree, a little full tree with roots in a sphere. And they said, that one. They're like 20 pictures, but they go, that one. Okay, great. So I post that. 1 hour later, I'm checking email, and in my inbox from some spiritual organization is a big announcement. Today is World Love a Tree Day. And the photo was a full tree in a sphere.
Wow.
And I said, good one. Thank you so much.
That's incredible.
It's just this web that we're part of. And this is why I trust beyond any doubt my guides.
Mm-hmm. How did you first start connecting with them?
Well, we all have spirit guides. I know it's woo-woo. Oh my gosh, this Navy commander went kicking and screaming to believe in spirit guides. Did not want to believe in spirit guides. It sounds woo-woo, but I would be doing readings for people bringing through their loved ones, and there's this guide talking to me saying, this woman has cancer, you need to tell her that. And I'm like, I'm not going to tell her that. And then to find out that they do, you learn to trust. I tell a story in the, I believe it's that book. I have a new book also called Mediumship. I think it's The Awakened Way. I tell a story about how my guides absolutely knew where I was, knew where I was going the next day by leading me to an amazing experience. So yeah, I came to believe that spirit guides are real. But I was sitting with some friends, two friends, one day in my house in 2009, I think. And we were trying to just connect with spirits. And all of a sudden, this masculine voice tells me to start speaking. And I ignored it. And he says, "Speak." And I silently said, "About what?" He just said, "Speak." And I opened my mouth and these words started coming out. And it grew from there. And we had a group of friends, 12 of them, would come to my house weekly for years to help me develop that ability. And they would ask the guides questions every week. And they answered immediately with no pause. And it was always satisfying. And there was evidence in there, such as this one. I remember my one assistant saying, "You know, my daughter is, she has these cold-like symptoms." And the guide said, "Diabetes." And everybody's like, "That's not a cold-like symptom." And they said, "Her diet is too rich. She needs to change this, check her blood levels." Turns out it had nothing to do with the cold, but she went to the doctor and said, "Mom, you're not going to believe this. I have diabetes." So every once in a while, they'll throw in little zingers like that to let us know, yeah, you need your evidence. We'll give it to you. But listen to the philosophy. It's all about love.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah.
I'm kind of jumping around here. I've like, you keep saying things that trigger a thought in my mind, and I have a whole list of things that I want to cover, and we'll eventually get to those. I want to be respectful of your time too, though. How are we doing on time, by the way?
There's no time.
In nearly all cases with modern health systems, you're waiting months for appointments only to spend a mere 10 minutes with a doctor who quickly hands out a generic diagnosis that is likely rooted in a total misunderstanding of health and causes, and then you're offered a one-size-fits-all medication or invasive treatments with unpleasant side effects. If this sounds all too familiar, consider a different approach with the New Biology Clinic, founded by Dr. Tom Cowan, a respected natural health doctor, author, and speaker. Dr. Cowan's holistic perspective on health and wellness and a deep understanding of the true nature of health and disease sets this clinic apart. With the New Biology Clinic, it's not about quick fixes and suppressing symptoms. The practitioners take time to understand your unique story, recognizing that health is unique to the individual and that illnesses have a variety of causes, physically and metaphysically. Members of the New Biology Clinic enjoy a flat monthly fee that includes a range of valuable services like health consults as needed, practitioner-led live streams on diverse health topics, access to a members-only resource library, and multiple live group sessions every month. These sessions cover fitness, breathing integration, biofield tuning, guided meditation, EFT tapping, and much more. Unlike traditional healthcare systems that thrive on frequent visits, prescriptions, treatments, and suppressing symptoms, the New Biology Clinic's motivation is to make you healthy and keep you that way. Visit newbiologyclinic.com to learn more and use code THEWAYFORWARD for $50 off your account activation. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com to receive $150 off your account activation. Your journey to genuine healing begins here. Okay, so the other thing that you said, I think this is coming from Brenda as well, was that there's nowhere else to go. That stood out.
There is only here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's so interesting with that is, without getting into the weeds on different Vedic traditions and other spiritual traditions across the earth and on the different layers of reality and the different astral realms and things like this, even modern science, with all of its issues, acknowledges that we can only perceive 0.0035% of the available electromagnetic spectrum. So when we talk about our ancestors and those who have passed being all around us, you're taking that to mean quite literally there is only here and now. They're on this realm. And then that recontextualizes what Christ was talking about in the Bible of the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's here right now. The kingdom of heaven is here. And you're pointing to your heart. So it all starts here. Within us, but also all around us right now. And that also brings up how God is in us and all around us right now here too.
God is
is this? Well, and that brings up the difference between pantheism and panentheism. And I've asked this on like every episode. And the answer that I always come to, it's like, it's both depending on the context of what you're looking at. You understand the difference between...
We could really split hairs on that, but it's both and.
Yeah, you know, both and. Such a paradox. Because I'm like, my left brain takes that spiritual understanding and tries to wrestle with it so much on... Is it pantheism that all is God, or is it panentheism that God is this unique entity that we are inextricably linked to?
Both.
And it's both.
So let me give you the best example of what she meant by there's only here.
Yeah.
If we had a flat screen TV on the wall right here and I turned it on, you're going to see people on the screen. Are they in the screen? No, they're not in the TV. What is that? That is a frequency, a signal being projected through an instrument. So would you agree that there are hundreds of TV channels right here, right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what happens if we reach up and we grab that TV and we smash it on the ground? Where did the signal that was playing there go?
It's still there. Yeah.
You are... an instrument through which the energy fields, the frequency of your unique signal plays.
Yeah.
If this instrument breaks, where did your signal go?
Still there.
That's it. But we have different channels playing all the time. Yeah. That's the spectrum of consciousness. So when I want to connect with Brenda or anybody's loved one, even if I never met them, it's my belief that opens the ability and bypasses the filter. And it's my intention to connect with them. Even if I don't know the exact number of the channel, I don't have to know how the remote control works to get to that channel. I push the button and it happens. Intention is pushing the button. And I say, okay, come merge with me now. That's the shift. Mm-hmm. And here they are. I don't see them all the time. I don't sense spirits all the time. I don't sense my guides all the time, but we're communicating a lot throughout the day. That's a different channel. But it's because it's all just interpenetrating in the one field of consciousness. So when we say the kingdom of heaven is within, and I point to the heart, picture a big web, like a spider's web, and the heart is your particular node where several strands come together, and everybody else is a strand, but that web has no end, no boundaries. It just is. That's the all that is. And all of us are the unique projections of that. And we tune in, we light up the strands. Do you know that a spider can tell what has landed in its web by tensioning the strands? They suddenly know, oh, that's a butterfly. I'm going to leave it there for a while. Oh, that's just a leaf. Forget that. So from our place in the web, we tension the strands. And like my lip just twitched. That's what happens when I tune into my guides. And we know what's happening with Aunt Margaret over there. And I tension the strands here, and there's Brenda. Because we're all part of the same web, different dimensions.
Wow. Wow.
So cool.
It's so cool. Yeah. It's really cool because I'm tying together just in my mind all of these various other interviews and things that I'm interested in discuss about a lot. And
that's what that people who've taken my classes say, that because I've really dived into how it works and I want to make sure people grasp it, they say that I help them connect the dots and learn to do it themselves.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. So the other thing you had mentioned a little bit, you didn't particularly use or specifically use the word subconscious, but I think that's what you're taking this to mean, or what you're meaning by saying this. That when you are either channeling or acting as a medium, that we all as individuals carry a lot of distortions and conditioning that we are, that is intentional, but that we are working through while we are harboring this meat suit, this flesh suit, right? And so with that, when you're acting as a medium or a channel, how do you know with certainty that you're not bringing in some of your own distortions in the message?
You take it for granted that you are.
Mm.
you know that it has to go through your filters. When I brought through those two men who had done such horrible things, that was years into my journey as a mediumship, because I realized if I can't imagine the horrible things that people will do to each other, I won't pick it up.
Yeah.
And I was raised in a functional family. I had very conditional love from my mother. We've worked on that after she passed, but there was no abuse. And so I've really learned by doing readings, but slowly, like I'll get bits and pieces of how somebody passed. And then I'll finally say to someone, like, I can see your daughter was in a car, but then there's something about a gun. I know this is very sudden. And I said, I'm just not getting how she passed. And the mother will say, well, yes, she was in a car with her boyfriend and he shot her. And I said, because my filters block that. So I also know that I will not have had the same experiences that the spirits I'm bringing through have had. Oh, right. They want me to share one of my favorite stories.
It's just, share it, please.
It's just a riot.
Please.
But I want to finish this thought.
Okay.
That, and so I've learned, and I teach my students to objectively report exactly what you're sensing. So quick story there. I reported to this woman, and do no harm is my number one rule. Don't say anything that's going to harm your client. But I said, your father in spirit is showing me you as a little girl, and he's taking you by the hand, and it appears like he's taking you into a closet. Now, a medium that is not careful might use their own experiences and say, you were sexually abused by your father. Now you have just done harm to your client,
right,
and you can't be sure of that. I reported it objectively, and the client went, oh, yes, my father was an amateur photographer, and he used to take me in the darkroom and let me watch his film develop.
Mm.
And you see the potential there. There's such potential for healing, but there's also potential for doing harm. So when I teach, I am just so careful to let people know, report objectively, make no assumptions, recognize it's going to go through your filters.
Mm-hmm.
Just let the spirit speak through you. But the funny story about our own experiences was, I was doing a reading for a woman and had a good connection with her son. And I said, yeah, he took his own life, he shows me, but he says he's surrounded by love. He's doing well. She's confirming all of these things. I remember in that reading, he says, your son is saying there's a lift about you. You're looking really good. Like you have a lift. And she said, yes, well, since he passed, I had a facelift. And I said, well, he knows about that. And then he suddenly flashed in my mind a conversation that had come up at a dinner party at our house the night before. This shows me how clever the spirits are. They're ready for the reading the next day. They're hanging around with me, but I don't know it. Because at the dinner table the night before, we were talking about the movie A Fish Called Wanda. And we were talking about this scene in the movie where the star puts a goldfish in his mouth, and you can see the goldfish's tail flapping out of the mouth. And we were all laughing about this. And this retired 3-star admiral at the table says, oh, I've eaten live goldfish. And we all just looked at him. We had this big, you know, ew, discussion. So in that reading, that young man showed me clear as day a little fish tail coming out of the mouth. See, they take things that are in our conscious mind. Very clever. And I said, your son is showing me that he ate goldfish. And she said, oh, yes, I kept him supplied. He loved them. I said, you kept your son supplied in goldfish? She said, yes. And I said, I like to share evidence in my teaching. This is off the charts. Do you mind if I share this? She said, no, go ahead. So the reading is over. I go on Facebook. I said, y'all aren't going to believe this. I just had this kid show me that he used to eat goldfish and his mother said she kept him supplied. The comments started flooding in, you know, and then way down the list is this comment. Do you think he could have meant the crackers? And I thought, oh, my God, I got to ask his mom. So I email her. Did he mean the crackers? And she writes back, well, of course. That is not an imprint.
No, absolutely.
That is a soul still playing the role of the son. That's important. Who is very creative, very humorous, and right here. And tapping into a conversation I had the night before. I haven't eaten a whole lot of Goldfish crackers. That would be hard for him to create energetically in my consciousness. But if he takes a recent conversation and knows it's going to be funny, that's how it works.
You discussed still playing the role of son. I want to go back to, so my son, I consider to be, let's say, less conditioned, incredibly tapped in. For example, my wife's pregnant right now, and we found out that my wife was pregnant. We weren't trying, not at all. And my son just walked up to her in the kitchen and said, Mom, you're pregnant. 3 days before she would have missed, or, you know, she did miss her period. And then 3 days later after that, we tested and, of course, pregnant.
So, and how old is your son?
He's seven. He just turned seven. And we have a whole list of things that he said that we want to turn into a coffee table book because it's incredible. And one of them, he was talking about, like, what might happen after he leaves his physical body. And he's like, when I die, I'm either going to go back up to heaven, or I'm just going to stay here, or I'm going to go into another body. I don't know. We'll see what happens. So we talk about still playing the role of the son. And there are some people who talk about how there is a higher self of that we have that is fundamentally an aspect of us. And again, it's so weird with language because it's all individuations of the whole to begin with anyway, but individuations of individuations of individuations. So we have the higher self that then, for lack of a better term, modulates itself in an infinite number of unique ways. And one of which, in this case, is this individual playing the role of the son, appearing to his mother, right?
Yep.
Through you as the medium.
Yeah.
And so I don't even know how to contextualize this question. It's like, how does that fit in with reincarnation? Okay. Does that soul end up going back?
We have really examined this. I've asked the guides over and over again. And I want to assure people who have loved ones who have passed that their loved one is very likely still continuing their role across the veil. I have lots of examples of people giving me evidential examples of what they're doing across the veil that jibe with what they like to do while they were here. So it's not like that son just materialized for the reading.
Right.
But when you talk about a higher self, I used to picture here's my body, here's my energy field, and the higher self is right here. But now I see it more like a giant soul field and then the Suzanne story field within it.
Got it.
So picture,
and that's soul. For the individuation still, though, right? So it's like concentric rings of fields, essentially.
Right.
Makes a lot of sense because that's how Eileen describes it too.
Working out in the gym on a machine once, and there was a wall of mirrors in front of me and a wall of mirrors behind, and I could see a whole bunch of me.
Yeah.
And the guide said, "Now you're getting a little closer to what it's like."
Wow.
And so, when the soul decides to incarnate, that sphere within a sphere can remain.
Yeah.
And it's just another sphere created.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
And it's all happening at the same time outside of time.
Yeah. That's the part that is really hard to understand. But,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting too, because Vinny, who I mentioned earlier, had that after death experience. And then also my mentor, Dr. Edith, who had an experience doing Qigong where she burst into a million points of light. Both of them describe, although there are differences in their individuated experiences, hers was a million points of light. His was, he just knew that he was much bigger than he actually is in this realm. Both when they came back to their bodies were like, it's really hard to fit all that I am back into this.
They say it's like trying to get back into a sausage casing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so the higher self is both your energy field and the rest of the soul.
Yeah.
That is incarnated as you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Rudolf Steiner talks about body, soul, spirit, whereas others will talk about mind, body, spirit. What do you perceive us to have? I know that, like, again, it's all ultimately one thing, But how, what is the framework by which you are operating with respect to that?
My framework is spirit is consciousness, this energy information that pervades everything, that becomes everything. The soul is a pattern of that spirit that is recognizable and individuated and unique from other patterns of spirit. Mind is a container within that pattern for the contents of experience.
And then the body.
Thoughts and feelings.
And then the body below that. Or would you say this is,
I mean, body is an experience in consciousness.
I know, that's the thing.
In the awakened way, I talk about all that exists is stuff arising in awareness.
Yeah.
Sensations, thoughts, and feelings, yeah. STF, stuff arising in awareness that appears to be solid for the experience.
I like that better. So you kind of blended Steiner's with someone else. It's like spirit, and that makes more sense to me. Spirit is all. Soul is the individuated version, and then mind is the container. And so the body is a function of the mind, which totally makes sense because the mind is influencing and co-creating the body itself.
Light bulbs.
Yeah, this is blowing my mind. Yeah, blowing my mind and my body. So, yeah. The other thing that you had mentioned too. Okay, go ahead. Please,
but this is why two energy fields merge in a reading, and I take on the symptoms of the spirit. It's simply imparting energy information into what feels like a symptom.
Yeah.
I had gave a reading once when I had a really bad cold. I checked with my guides first. Am I okay to tune in? Can I do a reading when I was all stuffed up? They said, do the reading. In that reading, this man in spirit came through and he showed me a trunk in an attic that I knew my client would recognize. I knew she'd been in it recently. It opened up in my mind's eye, and I smelled mold and mildew. It was as real as if that trunk had been opened in front of me. Yet, my nose was so stuffed, if my husband had walked in the room with a hot pizza, I could not have smelled it. Yet, it was that real.
Wow.
So, those kids you watch reading blindfolded, their sight is as real as without a blindfold. Because it's not really sight. It's all sensations arising in awareness with the appearance of vision and sensations. It's
yeah.
Does the sun rise and set? No, it just appears to.
Yeah.
But it's all for a purpose. It provides a set like this in which the story can unfold.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Beautiful. This is amazing. You brought up how that you know, you could smell the mold, right? So when it comes to all the clairs, what would you consider yourself? Would you consider yourself clairaudient, clairvoyant, like all of the clairs at this point? So
Yeah, but the clairvoyance not to the point of seeing a spirit sitting in a chair over
there.
But
you see it in your mind's eye?
In my mind's eye,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I can't describe their faces generally, not yet. I'm hoping that comes. But I'll see images like the fish tail and...
And you see all of that in your mind's eye.
Yes.
Okay. Because it's interesting because other people obviously have the ability to literally see someone's energetic field. So are those things that just as you continued these meditative practices and continued setting the intention,
that's it.
You help to cultivate over time?
And the more you do the practice, that's why I tell my students, you have to do it. And that builds the trust and the ability.
So I mentioned earlier Dr. Edith's experience of doing Qigong and then bursting into a million points of light. And then there are other people who, of course, consume, like maybe they sit in an ayahuasca ceremony or they do bufo or something like this in order to have this sort of transcendental experience of oneness. And then there's the phenomena of astral projection and then remote viewing. Where do all those things kind of fit into, I guess, the journey of experiencing or piercing the veil? Do you perceive those things to be actual, genuine experiences of piercing the veil?
To me, the veil is the brain, the brain's filter. When you no longer have a brain, you cross the veil.
Oh, wow.
And here's the astral realm, right? And so in medium, just, I've never used the term pierces the veil, but bypasses the brain's filters to access the other frequencies that are already here. So everything you describe there are adventures in consciousness. Depends on what intention you set, or by grace, what experience you're given by spirit for your own growth. I've had some wild experiences and communicated with mythological beings, wow, with evidence. And one of them said to me, anything that can be created in consciousness is real and can provide healing, information, energy, wisdom, and growth. Stop questioning what is real. Because I said to him, this there's a video on my YouTube channel called She Spoke to a Norse God. This is when the god Odin shows up. I've never studied Odin. And he gave me all kinds of information about him. You know, I flew a flying horse. I literally went, ow, as I had a piercing pain in my side. And it turns out that Odin was pierced by a spear in his left side. Flew a flying horse. All of this I find online afterwards. So I went back into meditation. Set the intention to connect with him again, because he just dropped in on me unexpectedly in one of my adventures in consciousness. No drugs. I've never used any plant medicine or anything. It's all meditation, expanded states of consciousness. I said, Odin, I have some questions. Please come back. And I feel him and I sense him again. I saw him. He looked like Moses. I saw the long hair, the grizzly old wrinkled face. And that's what the depictions of him online look like. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you real? And he said, as real as you are, but not human. Mm-hmm. And I said, but you're a myth. And he said, you are a myth. Wow. What's a myth?
Right.
What is the hero's journey in mythology? You come in to fight battles, to take on the good and the bad. You learn and grow along the way, and you complete the cycle. That's what we are.
Wow.
We are spirit going through our own mythological hero's journey, every single one of us. And we say, this is the only thing that's real. They must just laugh with joy at us, because we get lost in the dream.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about astral projection. Where do you go, Alec?
Yeah.
There's only here. In consciousness.
Yeah.
So in your dream state, are you going somewhere? No, it's happening in consciousness.
You're perceiving here, just another version of it or an expanded version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing if you're going to take plant medicine. I've read some amazing accounts. I don't care to do that. I like the slow, steady, and somewhat predictable.
I'll give you a high five for that, because I'm the exact same way. And there's not knocking anyone who's done plant medicine and had those experiences. But I always say, like, we can cultivate those same things here and now with our own material.
But they don't go anywhere either. Mm-hmm. It all unfolds here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. On that note, with you bringing up Odin and thought sort of creating experience, and that's such an important thing for me, especially because, let's say, a lot of my audience is very alternative leaning and very aware of the various so-called nefarious agendas that are occurring in the world. And yes, I'm not saying that it's not important to be aware of those things. And like, I discuss those things, I have conversations about them, and like have philosophical discussions on them. But I always come back to even bringing it real in reality. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Veda Austin. Masaru Emoto, you may be familiar with. Okay, so Veda Austin has expanded on the work of Masaru Emoto and made it accessible to lay people. It's really incredible. I'll show you afterwards.
We're based out of where?
She's based out of New Zealand.
I've definitely looked into her work.
Okay.
I love it. Yeah.
Right. And so it is showing, in my opinion, irrefutable evidence that our thoughts have a direct impact on the physical expression and physical structure of water.
Without doubt.
We are all water-based beings. Virtually all life requires water. Water permeates all facets of this reality. If you just take water without the other, you know, elements, we have an actual impact just with our thought, feeling, belief systems, and spoken words. And so when it comes to these so-called nefarious agendas that are happening, and the reason I put them as so-called is because ultimately you can use those as catalysts to transmute in order for your own individual development, but also to do good work in the collective to impact other people. But most importantly, it's important to, yes, be aware of those things that are occurring. I'm not saying to turn a blind eye to them, spiritual bypass your own darkness or the darkness of other people, but to come back to, okay, I orient and direct my own thought energy, my own feelings, belief systems, and words and actions, and have a direct impact on the physical reality itself with those. So it would behoove of us to not obsessively focus on the dark agendas, because all we're doing in that process is helping to co-create more of it with our own thought.
That's right.
I just tied that all together with what you just said. I'm like, yes, like that's just more emphasis on what I've already been saying. I mean, this is what I speak on quite a bit. So it's so important to hear that.
And to make this practical, we're constantly putting new content on my channel, and we just put up a little short video about me, an experience I had in an AT&T store. You know how painful it is to change out your phone, or it used to be? I mean, agony.
It's still bad.
I'm sitting there for an hour with this guy trying to help me change my phone out. And the store was crowded, and this man walked in, and really loud, he said, "Isn't there anybody here to help anybody?" And the manager looked up and said, "Sir, we'll get to you in a minute." And he kept talking really loud. And you looked around the store, and people are withdrawing and trying to ignore him and not look at him. He was being really rude. And I've learned how our thoughts can change things. So I turned and I looked at him, and I just opened my heart, and I just started radiating love. And I didn't realize I was looking right at him, because I don't like confrontation. I don't know many people who do. And suddenly, really loudly, he says, "What are you doing?"
That's what I was going to guess. Like, you didn't even have the wherewithal to realize you're just staring at him. He's like, "Damn, what the?"
And then,
he can probably feel that.
So everybody in the store now is listening, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, "I'm sending you love." And he said, "What?" And I said, "I'm sending you love." And he said, "I don't need love." And I said, "Everybody does." And then I went back, because I was like, now I'm outside of the comfort zone. I was in soul awareness, but I went back to the guy dealing with my phone, and I looked up and he's gone. And I looked at the manager and I said, "What happened?" She said, "He just went fleeing out of here." She said, "What did you do? I need to try that."
That's incredible.
Yeah.
You were just too much of a strong, coherent field. So he either had to like up level with you, or just get the heck away from you as far as he could.
Up level. That's a word I teach, and I haven't heard other people use it.
But amazing. Yeah. Probably just popped in because I'm literally sitting
there
in your field
emerging.
Right now. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so another thing that I wanted to talk about is what happens to those who pass that are beyond the veil. And I want to bring in some additional context too. Obviously, there are a lot of similarities between those who have had near-death experiences, like seeing the white light, going towards it, having the afterlife review sort of thing that happens to a lot of people, meeting historical figures or meeting people, ancestors from their past or a higher aspect of themselves, or a lot of people talk about meeting Christ. So I've come to my own conclusion that, and I'd like to hear if you think this is accurate, that if you are a Christian in this lifetime who fundamentally believes that you are going to hell, let's say, as an example, right? That when you pass for some time, and again, it's outside of time, but for some extended period, you may experience that going to hell if you truly believe in it strongly enough.
Yes.
And likewise, that means that if you are a Christian who believes that you are going to heaven, and you believe that strongly enough, and I'm sure there's some karmic implications in both cases here that are sort of objective, if you will, but you will also experience that. So, because it all goes back to our individual ability to co-create this experience based on our fundamental belief system.
Yes.
So is that kind of how—
Yes, the download concluded? I told you about that in the video is— The afterlife, what can you expect? They actually say that those who expect only darkness will briefly experience that, but there's no sense of time. In your dream, how long is briefly? How long is a long time?
I've had dreams that feel like 2 years, so.
Until you notice that there's a being here and inviting you to the light, and boom, you're in the light. Yeah. I bring through so many spirits that I can tell right away, oh, they were Catholic because they're showing me the symbol of a rosary, or this person was Jewish, and invariably, the Catholic people, some of them will say, I was met by Mary, or Jesus met me. And the person, their loved one, will start crying and saying, that was their wish. That was their wish. I'm so glad. And then the invariably part is they say, but it's so much more. My eyes have been open. I had one who was, the father was a minister, and he said, I was too limited. It's so much more. I just did a reading last week for a woman, and I said, there's a man here. He feels like your grandfather. He's standing here in a suit. He's very stiff, very formal. He has a fedora hat on, and he's holding a Bible just like this. She says, oh, that's my grandfather. He was really rigid about his religion. And I said, and he was a lay person at the church. Yes, he was. I said, he's not saying anything else. He just showed up. She really wanted to talk to her brother, who we did talk to him across the veil. But she has studied mediumship with me, and she sees the spirits objectively. And I said, well, go talk to that grandfather on your own. I feel that's why he showed up. And she talked to me a couple of days later. She said, I invited him in. He showed up with that big Bible. And I said, grandfather, you can put that down now. It's much more open than you think. And she said, he actually put it down. And then he said, thank you.
Wow.
Which was really cool. Because there's nothing wrong with those beliefs, right, but they are limiting.
Right.
I had a man at a conference, an International Association of Near-Death Studies, IANS conference, asked for 10 minutes of my time. I got to talk to you. So, okay. So we go and we sit off to the side in the lobby. He said, I am a Pentecostal minister. I've been the pastor of my church for 40 years. And I just took your class in mediumship. I was stunned and thrilled because a lot of people have their own BS about mediumship, that it's wrong or evil. And it's so healing. So belief system, remember, about how helpful it is. So to have this Pentecostal minister take the class, and he said, and I used it to connect with a loved one who passed. I got a message for somebody else who's still here. But some of my parishioners are a little concerned about me. They said, what about this mediumship? Are you sure you should be studying that? And he said, it's very helpful. It's fine. And they said, but doesn't it conflict with Christianity? And he said, I tell them, it's Christianity with the walls blown out. I love that. Because I have had such experiences with Jesus, raised with no religion whatsoever. But I asked him, if you're real, would you come to me? And the evidence, it left me just saying, there is a God.
Can you share some of them?
I had been reading some channeled material, allegedly, from Jesus.
Which book?
I was just going to say Hammer. John Mark Hammer.
Have you ever read A Course in Miracles?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay. Cool.
But this was much easier reading than A Course in Miracles.
A Course in Miracles is tough to digest. Yep. Yeah.
And in that book, he was communing with Jesus. It was a surprise. He wasn't raised with Jesus in his life. We had no religion growing up. And Jesus gave him Bible verses that were significant as evidence that it was him. So I'm sitting on my living room couch, and I said, Jesus, I would love to have the experience of you. Eric, the energy that stepped into my field. I'm used to connecting with people's loved ones, and I can feel their personality. The love. I could have just sat in that space forever. I just heard, you already are. We already are sitting in that space forever. Mm. And I said, I know this is you, but not as this man in a limited form, but as the Christ consciousness. Can you give me a Bible verse that's significant? Because I don't know the Bible at all. Mm. Just, but you hear John, Mark, Luke. I mean, I just could say some names. And he said, Thessalonians 2:13. Just then my husband walked into the living room. I wasn't in my meditation room. I was just doing an experiment. And it broke the state of consciousness I was in. And I looked at Ty and I said, what is Thessalonians? And he looked stunned because he knows the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd never heard that word come out of my mouth. And he said, it's a chapter in the Bible. And I said, I know there's a Bible in this house somewhere. We got to find it and look it up. And I later looked up how many verses are in the Bible. Do you know?
No,
you want to take a guess?
No.
33,000.
33,000.
And if you just open up and put your thumb down, you'll get some talk about a woman in a robe, or you'll get a donkey here, or you'll get somebody that was smitten or something, you know, did all kinds of things. And beautiful things and irrelevant things if you're asking Jesus, is this you?
Right.
We go to Thessalonians 2:13, and I'm paraphrasing now, but it is, the things of the Spirit are foolishness to man who doesn't believe, but to the man who believes, they are the word of God.
Wow.
So the next day, I went into meditation and I said, I want to feel you again. Would you step in? Boom. And without asking for any evidence, he said, Corinthians 2:14. 1 Corinthians. I didn't know there were two. I didn't even know what Corinthians is. And I look it up and it is almost the identical message as Thessalonians 2:13. So then the next time I channeled for my weekly group, he dropped in and I spoke as him. He spoke through me. And the people around me, we had a guest that day, and I was stunned that that would even happen when we had a guest visitor for the group of 12 that normally sat with me. And everybody was crying.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't deny the energy, and the message was so beautiful. So it was about 3 months later, my husband and I were going on a road trip to Key West. We're packing up the car, and a voice, I didn't know who it was, my guide said, get Joel Goldsmith's little book. Joel, do you know Joel Goldsmith?
No.
Great New Thought writer who's long passed. And I knew which book they meant. I'd read it about 5 years earlier, and I keep all my books. I have a big library at home, and I go running through the house, can't find it. And I hear, look again, can't find it. My husband's now in the car, ready to go, tapping the steering wheel. And I said, I got to look one more time. There's a book I'm supposed to get. And this time I found it. Throw it in my bag, get in the car. We're going down the highway, and I hear, get out the book. I start leafing through. I'm a highlighter, right? So I'm looking at the highlighted parts. I don't know what I'm looking for. And I hear, start at the beginning, read every word. It's a little book. So I'm soon on page 27, and I read a phrase that sounds familiar to me, but there are no quotes around it. Goldsmith did not quote something he should have quoted. It was talking about people not believing the word of spirit when they hear it from God. And I turn the page, and there's another quote that's not in quotes. And it sounds very familiar. And my heart starts to pick up. And this was before we had smartphones and internet in the car. When we got where we were going, I get on the internet and I type in the words from Goldsmith's book, 2 pages apart, no quotes between them, not highlighted from 5 years ago. It was 1 Corinthians 2:14 and Thessalonians.
Oh my goodness.
2:13. That's when I knew there is a God. And all the messages that Jesus said when he came to me is, do not worship me as the only God. The kingdom of heaven is within.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge message for all of us. Christ consciousness is, as you know, when we come to know that all that is spirit,
mm-hmm.
which is synonymous. Spirit is the spiritual word for God, which is the religious term for consciousness, which is the scientific term.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends on what word you use. Somebody asked Edison once, Mr. Edison, what is electricity? And he said, Madam, electricity is. Use it. So you ask me, what is spirit? What is God? What is consciousness? It is here, here. Use it.
Mm-hmm.
Tap into it. Use it to radiate love to our world, to ask for guidance, to know you're not alone, to say, what if I'm part of this web and I really have guides that will help me and I don't have to struggle? What if my struggles actually have purpose? What if I'm actually whole and complete already at the level of the soul. I may be wounded here as in a body, but I am whole. Mm-hmm. Use that and heal thyself.
Oh, man. This is incredible. This is amazing.
I'm and like this is away. Not how I talked when I was in the Navy. Trust me.
Well, this isn't what I talked
I
about
none of this.
When I was in the Army. I will say, though, for me, in like, I don't think I give myself enough credit in the past version of me. And what I mean by that is, because I say the same type of stuff, like, and I didn't talk about this type of stuff in the Army, but this was when I was talking to my good friend, Jordan Grant. And we were just talking about like why it is we quote woke up. I don't even like using that term anymore. I like saying remembered, like are on a journey of remembering rather than waking up.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I still haven't worked out why I like that better. You can go ahead.
It's because there's an aspect of all of us, the ego, that wants to say I'm awakened.
Right.
If anybody says I'm awakened, run away.
No, you know, I can't stand
I've had
that.
Moments of knowing who I am. Wow. And then they disappear for a while. And then they come back.
Remembering.
Yeah, remembering. That's why that's beautiful. Yeah. It's because your ego's, you know, there's a part of you that knows we don't want to go into ego. And that's beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it. Yeah. Thank you for that, by the way. There, even before a lot of like my childhood traumatic experiences, I think especially before those, I did have this like thing inside of me that I just remembered that there's more to this experience, or I felt like I'm not from here type of thing. I remember going on Ask Jeeves when I was younger before there was Google.
Oh, yeah.
Like I feel like I'm not from here, typing that in when I was like 10, 11.
That's the soul.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And so like, I know that more conditioning and trauma came in. And of course, when I was in the military, I definitely did not speak like this. But there was always that lingering feeling inside of me. And I just wonder if the overwhelming majority of souls, if not all souls, while harboring this suit that we're wearing, also sort of have that lingering in the back of their mind. And I think so. And I think it's even to the point that
the soul is always aware.
Yeah.
Does it filter through?
Yeah, and that's what I mean.
Awareness.
I know that the soul is always aware. I meant more so, does it like filter through? Is it always sort of lingering in the back of someone's mind or consciousness at some level? And I think that it is.
Conscience.
Yeah, conscience. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've also talked about how I think like, you know, we could philosophize all day on like, is there such thing as objective morality? And I think, but I can't claim to know this with certainty, that there is objective morality that is written on all of our hearts. It's just that we have varying degrees of conditioning while in this realm that lead us to stray away from it. But there is this sort of objective morality. And I guess an extreme example of that is virtually all human beings could see a human being killed on video or something like that, or see it happen from them. And we know that's not right.
That's right.
Or a human being robbing another human being. We're like, oh, we know deep
that's
down
right.
that that's not right.
That's the soul. Yeah. That's the built-in relief valve right there. Yeah.
So off camera, you were talking about the journey of remembrance. Can you touch on that a little bit?
You were just talking about awakening versus remembering. They're really the same thing. But I attended a conference once, and there was this composer, Richard Schulman, who channels music. And the guide said, go talk to him. Okay. So I go up to him, and I said, I know this is going to sound silly, but I'm this retired Navy commander that now talks to spirit. And he goes, you came to the Unity Church where I play. I know you. And so I didn't have to make this big introduction. I said, my guides want me to talk to you. I think we're supposed to do something together. And he says, I think you're right. Well, he had a sound studio. He put me in one room, him in the other. And I knew that I was supposed to channel my guides while he channeled music, both spontaneous, but separate rooms. So we set this up for the next morning. And I'm going in there blind. I don't know what the guides are going to talk about, but they awoke me at 5 a.m. and they said, we'll give you this much. It's going to be called A Journey of Remembrance. I said, okay. So we go in and, you know, here we go, take one. There was only one take. I just got into this with the headphones on. I can hear the music coming through and the words that came through me, and the music just danced and flowed, and that the guides took us on this journey through what they called the sacred seven aspects of the soul. And it's this incredible journey that in your human life, you may think this and you may feel that, and it makes you feel what it's like to be human. And then they say, but the soul knows you are this and you are that. And then you go back to the human, but you know you are this. And when it was over, it's about 32 minutes long, I think, it just ended so beautifully that when I get totally out of sorts, just really lose that remembrance and just need to reconnect, I'll sit and listen to that. It's, you could call it a meditation, but it's more an experience. Just set aside 32 minutes. It's free on my website.
I'll link it in the show notes.
SuzanneGeisman.com/gifts. Go down and find Journey of Remembrance. I cry when they get to certain parts of it. And it really does bring that soul awareness to the forefront. And you know you're both. And you know you're going to go through life and have these moments where you just say, why did I come here? And then you remember. It is beautiful.
Yeah. I feel like that answers my other question that I was going to ask at the beginning. What is the purpose of this experience?
For the fullness of it. And that's why, you know, I teach, you have the way forward. I talk about the awakened way of living. It's based on three principles that you're not only human. You're part of one big web connecting all that is. And the healing and creative force of the universe is love. Mm. Where there's no separation, we call that love. And the web is light. It can't be separated. The greatest challenge facing all of us is the misperception that we are separate from each other. That's the bottom line. And the belief that we are separate from God, spirit, consciousness. Both of those are what leads to all of our challenges. But I was going to say something about the awakened way, the three. Oh, you were talking about why do we come here? For the fullness, for the rocks and the roots and the flowy ride. And nobody said it was going to be easy. But the problem is, in the American belief system, we are guaranteed happiness. It's written, right. You know? And so if we're not happy, something's wrong. Yeah. I was raised by parents, we were not allowed to be angry or sad or upset. And so when I felt this emptiness inside, I went to the refrigerator and I tried to fill it with cookies and ice cream. And food was my drug of choice for the first half of my life. And it never filled that hole. Mm-hmm. And people everywhere are trying to fill that emptiness because we think we're supposed to be happy and feel good all the time. And the awakened way shows you, feel it all. But just acknowledge it, process it, and you will feel whole. Mm. So this awakened way of teaching, literally the phrase my guides gave me, and it's so true. It takes you from an emptiness that just can't be filled. And I know people listening can identify with this because it's the human condition. It takes you from an emptiness that can't be filled to a fullness that can't be contained. Mm. That's why we came here, for that journey from emptiness to fullness. And I hope, I got the goosebumps. I hope people can feel it. I'm not always like this.
Yeah.
But like right now, I am so grateful for the opportunity to hopefully help somebody have that remembrance right now as they hear this, as their soul is saying, listen, listen, write that down. That's why you're here. Feel it all, but don't wallow in it. Feel it and process it, because the contrast between the stuff that is not in alignment with your soul and this joy is what we came here to feel. Mm. And you can't have that light without the darkness.
So well said. I love that you said that too, because I know that there are different ways to process traumatic things that have happened in our lives, or traumatic things that are happening right now, you know, these so-called negative emotions that we experience. And again, I think that we're meant to experience it, but there's always that question as the trauma healing space and the wellness space continues to grow is like, okay, how do we process trauma? And some people have EMDR, some people have EFT, some people do certain types of meditation, some people will do some somatic release exercises. And I think it's like all of our unique individual way to deal with that, but it all comes back to, and I had this as my direct experience when I did an extended water fast, which required that I couldn't go cope with eating food or couldn't go cope with working out as I typically do. I had to really just sit and feel. And what I really learned is that a lot of these things that I, at some level, was wanting to avoid feeling or avoid dealing with in my own consciousness or in my past or things like this, I just needed to sit and feel them to completion as they arose.
Yeah.
And as I did that, bliss,
no
absolute
more
bliss. Yeah, like yeah. That's all it is. I think it gets overcomplicated in the trauma healing space. And again, it's unique to the individual and there are other ways that work for some people versus others. But all that's required is that you sit and feel to completion as they arise.
Yeah.
That's it.
I teach a method, 3 minutes of sitting in peace every day. SIP. It's called the SIP of the Divine. There's a video on YouTube for that.
SIP of the Divine.
People say, I don't have time to meditate. You got 3 minutes to make a cup of coffee and drink it. You can take a sip of the divine for 3 minutes and sit and notice what comes up. Just notice your thoughts. You're creating space. So I learned from a friend of mine something I didn't realize that a lot of people deal with that gets in the way. Why people make excuses for meditation? Because when you sit quietly, then that stuff comes up that you just gave the perfect example of it. And this woman, my dear friend Irene, her daughter Carly had passed very traumatically from cancer. And she said she was terrified that that groundhog moment of her daughter dying would come up. She just learned to push that away. And she thought, if I sit for 3 minutes, I'm going to have to feel that. And she finally got just so tired of avoiding it. She said, I give up. That's the surrender moment. So she sat and here it came. And she sat with it and it came up. And it resolved. It went away and she said, it didn't kill me. And what's left? Peace.
Mm.
She broke through that barrier because she had the courage, which comes from the soul. It's one of the sacred seven aspects of the soul, to sit and be with it all.
Mm. Beautiful.
I have a method in my book, the No Fault Method, 7 steps for dealing with triggers. And that's really helpful too.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. I'm just blown away by this conversation so far. This has been absolutely amazing. It's just piecing together so many different things. I got to give a shout out to her too, who's sitting off camera, Rebecca. She's the one who said that I should interview you and that's why you're sitting in this chair.
She took some of my classes on the Shift Network. I usually have one or two of those going on at any one time.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that I sit here and I listen to myself and this is all, I asked my team of spirits before we started. I said, please talk through me. Talk with me. This is not Suzanne Giesman, this smart person sitting here all wise. This I give all credit to spirit. And this is what they've taught me over the years, and I've been talking to them for over 15 years. It's changed my life, and happily it's changed lots of people's lives. Yeah. So I hope that it helps other people shortcut some of the pain, but we come here for the pain. So. Mm.
Well, you're a beautiful medium/channel for spirit, so I really appreciate that. I remembered now the thing that I had forgotten earlier that I wanted to talk about.
And let me reframe that for you. You didn't remember. It was put back in awareness.
It was put back in. Exactly. It was put back in awareness. So you brought up earlier the importance of connecting with nature. And I don't remember the exact context that you said it in. And I've thought this so much because I've interviewed a guy by the name of Dean Hall who had stage 2 or 3 cancer twice that he healed by forest bathing. And then I know for me, when I did my extended water fast, a huge part of that was I was in Crested Butte, Colorado, and I was outside basically the whole time, like the whole time during that water fast. And you hear that so much. And then you look at these ancient indigenous cultures and spiritual practices, and they all deal with being immersed in nature in order to connect with the divine, connect with themselves in a more deep way. And I've thought about this quite a bit. And it's not to say that technology is bad. I mean, we're sitting in a room with loads of technology, lots of non-native EMFs right now. I always try to balance that out with getting outside quite a bit and putting my bare feet on the earth, standing in the sun. But I think that a lot of mankind's issues arise as we continue to immerse ourselves in technology. And it's at the very foundation simply because all of these things are infused with, I won't say all, but a lot of these things are infused with intentions to make money, one, but then two, are infused with an altered version of the divine. What I mean by that is, like, when you go step in nature, that is God unadulterated. Yes. That is God unimpacted by our own co-creative capacity. And we have a beautiful co-creative capacity for better and for worse. And technology is just a tool that can be used for better and for worse. But the point is that we're immersing ourselves in the energy and the frequency of God when we're in nature versus when we're amongst man-made things too much, we're conditioned away from that, are conditioned to forget that our own connection, that we are a fundamental aspect of that thing. So then that leads to, or can lead to, the mind sort of tricking itself and sort of perceiving itself as separate from God. That's and separate from nature.
So I know my guides knew I had a week of several podcasts in a row, because 3 days ago they gave me the greatest way to look at what you just said. And this is the third time now in 3 days I've gotten to share this. And I hope you love it as much as I do. You're just talking about we're too much drawn by technology and not immersed in nature, our true connection with spirit. We have this outward objective focus instead of going to what's always on already here. I love acronyms. Was the Army big on acronyms?
Oh my goodness.
God. The Navy, the Air Force is the worst, but the Navy's big on acronyms. So, you know, we have SIP of the Divine and the No Fault Method, all these acronyms, the BS, it's an acronym.
But I love it though.
That the outward objective focus keeps us from seeing what's always and already here. That's, we go outward and it's always, oof, that's OOF, instead of, AAH. That's not what I was just going to share with you. That's still coming. You get
what's it? The AAH acronym?
Always and already here.
Always
peace.
And already here instead of outward objective. Okay.
Oof,
focus.
Versus ah. Oof, versus ah. But here's why. Talk about conditioning. You want an answer to something. What's the first thing most people think to do these days? They go, hey, Siri. And what my guide showed me the other day is we're just missing two little letters. We should be saying, hey, spirit. It's the same letters.
Right.
That's the problem. Native people automatically out in nature turn within to what's always and already here. Spirit, what's the answer? And it's known because you're connected to it. It comes in. It's given to you. The outward objective focus. Hey, Siri, give me an answer. That's AI. It has no soul. Mm-hmm. You are a soul. Go within and ask, hey, Spirit. That's the shift we're talking about. Isn't that great?
Beautiful.
See, I just get so excited because I didn't come up with that. That's given to me.
Yeah.
Because they know I get to share it on your podcast.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You also talk about the three E's. Can we touch on that a little bit as well?
Yeah. The three E's are what I call the way of living the awakened way, how to progress on the hero's journey, your path. The first one is educate yourself about the greater reality, who you really are. Your podcast helps people to do that. Watching people's NDEs, watching the videos that I put out there, reading books about this kind of thing. Educate, educate, educate. But this, the three E's are not linear. You just do them as spirit guides you. The second one is, we talked about this, experience the greater reality for yourself. And that happens in expanded states of consciousness, meditation, or the journey of remembrance, the sip of the divine, moments of contemplation, getting out in nature. Experience your expanded state, your higher self, for yourself. Because you and I could tell stories for hours and talk about this for hours, but it needs to become real for each person through experience. And then the third one is engage the higher self and higher consciousness yourself. I teach students all the time, and some of them will say, I did sense a spirit in the middle of the night. I knew it was there. I could even see this light. Who do you think it was? And I said, did you ask? You know, engage them. This is not just energy. This is sentient consciousness. These are beings of light just like we are. Call them whatever you want to call them. A soul, an individuated unit of consciousness. Engage higher consciousness. Talk to your loved ones who have passed. Ask them to give you signs. Ask your guides for guidance. Say, hey, spirit, 10, 20 times a day, and then listen. Open the mind and notice what stands out in the sensations, thoughts, and feelings, the stuff that bubbles up afterwards.
And that's where you really have to tune inward and know, because you want to ensure that only beings who are of a positive orientation, who are here for love, are coming through you.
That's right? Our overall intention every day, all the time. We don't need to state it. I am the light. Only the highest and most beneficial beings are allowed into my field.
Amazing.
That's an ongoing held in awareness. That's it.
And you have a field and it programs it and you're good.
But I was awakened in the middle of the night about a month ago by what we would call demons, evil beings coming at me. Very real. I knew I wasn't dreaming, but I could see them in my mind's eye. They were coming at me with these claws and I was like, what is this? But I learned to ask my guys, what is going on? They said, watch it. Watch it. So I watched it and I felt these hands go around my neck and I said, okay, now what? And they said, just love them. And I said, you're absolutely right. You bring in what's missing. And I said, literally terrified. I felt the human body react to that. And I said, I don't know why you are, but all I have for you is love. It was like the Wizard of Oz where the Wicked Witch just dissolves. You know, it's like this thing.
They turned into the little fat man behind the curtain.
It just dissolved. It was a test. I don't know where it came from. Uh-huh. People say, aren't you worried about trickster demons? How do you know trickster beings? How do you know this is the real spirit? And I say, I can't ever know. Was Odin really a mythological figure or was it something else? And Odin came back to me and said, it's all spirit. It's all consciousness appearing as this and this and this. It's all God. It's all spirit. Is it helpful? That's the only question that matters. Mm. Not is it real? Is it helpful? Is it a trickster? How would I know? Is it helpful to this grieving person? To me, this is a very real person I'm dealing with across the veil. I can see the healing effect on the person I'm helping.
Mm-hmm. You can feel it here,
too. And it furthers their journey.
Yeah.
So we keep doing it.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can feel it here, too. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I bet you can feel it here,
gosh,
too. And that's
yes.
like what it comes back to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. Okay, I have one more question for you. So we're recording this on November 6th, the day after what is, for most, I will say, I don't experience this myself, but for a lot of people, a very chaotic and tumultuous and divisive time where, families are at each other's throats, people are at each other's throats, and people completely separate with those who think differently than them on either side of the spectrum. Or there are people who take sort of a middle approach where I think it's all nonsense and I just try not to pay attention to it. But with all that being said, the whole spectrum of different thoughts and beliefs and perceptions, how can we, despite, let's say, being diametrically opposed in every way, shape, and form to another human being and their perceptions, still come back to this understanding of what we're talking about here?
Actually, easier than you think. And as you said that, my guides grabbed me and they're saying, this is...
I saw you look that way while I was talking.
You're asking the question about these chaotic times, and they said, opportunity. And it takes me back to a story I tell in The Awakened Way about going to a movie in a multiplex cinema. And you come out of the movie, what's the first thing you do? Go to the bathroom. So I'm in the bathroom and in comes this parade of women and they are morose. Every one of them is just, they look like they'd come from a funeral. And I looked at one of them and I said, what movie did you just watch? And she said, American Sniper. And I had not intended to watch the movie. And I thought, wow, people pay good money to come out feeling like that?
Right.
Really? And then I got this insight. This is like life. We are actors on a stage, and we get sucked into the drama, and we end up like that. And we're going through some chaotic times right now, and people are so caught up in the roles, we've forgotten we're souls. And we souls came here knowing we can step out of the theater at any time. It's called meditation, and take a breather. But we came here for the ups and downs, for the growth and the opportunities that will ensue. So I said, I wonder if I could go to that movie and not come out looking like that. If I could go to that movie, American Sniper, and not get sucked into the drama. So I paid my $8. That tells you how long ago it was. And I go in the theater by myself. And I did what spiritual teachers will tell you to do. Be the neutral observer. We go into the movies willingly getting caught up so we can feel all those emotions. We love to be horrified and scared out of our wits because we know we'll step out anytime, get some popcorn. So I watched it, and Alec, it was the most amazing experience. So interesting, because here are these battles. He was a sniper in Marines or Army, I think
Army.
Army.
Yeah.
And here's the enemy. But while I watched objectively, I could see why the other side was fighting. I'm not identifying anybody as a good guy or a bad guy. That was huge for me. And then I saw what happened at the end and why everybody was so depressed. But I kept practicing this phrase that my guides taught me years ago. Isn't that interesting? When you just observe the drama and you say, isn't that interesting? That helps you connect with the soul. That helps you remember, I came into this theater of the absurd here right now. I don't have to get caught up in it. And when I don't get caught up in it, I don't see good guys and bad guys. I don't see Republicans and Democrats. I see souls who took on the toughest assignment ever. A conscious being of light on a journey. And that's why I have my human thoughts about what unfolded in the election. But I also can just say, isn't that interesting? This is an opportunity. And people who don't remember why we're here will use it to clash and see enemies. But what did we talk about earlier? The number one reason we fight is we see each other as separate. When you see with the eyes of the soul, you don't even see a body. You know, we've been merging here for 2 hours together. That's love.
Mm-hmm.
When I do readings for people that I've never met, sometimes I feel their loved ones and spirits love so viscerally for the one who's still here. I'll look at a complete stranger. I remember doing a reading for a gay man, and his partner who had died came through. And here I am at the end, and I looked at him and I said, I love you so much, because I had become his partner.
Yeah.
That's feeling with the soul. I want that for everybody, but maybe they'll get there and maybe they won't. I've even lost the need to change the world because I see the world for what it is, an opportunity. I hope people come to love. I hope they come to see with the souls. And you know what? If they don't, that's okay too.
Mm.
It's a journey.
Man, blown away, like I said. Yeah, speechless. Yeah, Suzanne, thank you so much for being here. This was absolutely incredible. It's also so cool to see someone who came from a military background like you, was an officer in the military just like I was, to be sitting here having this conversation.
Yeah.
Am I your first military officer to
interview? Oh, yeah. And you know, there's no cool. rank anymore. I talked about the 3-star admiral at our dinner at that time.
Yeah, I feel like I should have been like standing at parade rest.
And see, that's the thing. There's no rank anymore. You know, the rank makes you separate. It makes you, puts you in this hierarchy. And it's necessary in the roles where we are in our journey. Right. But I love the freedom of just being.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for doing this. All right.